tradition? King. Folk. Home.
Dare you see her, waiting for you to propose? You tell us all that you oppose, quite demographic decline. But we can't succeed if white people don't breed. You've got to wife the girl.
What the fuck was that?
Aging nihilists say she'll take your cash and run. Enjoy the decline, just have fun. Words that will doom our people. Don't let her womb grow dry. Don't let the white race die. Go on and wife the girl. Fush with me now. Sha-la-la-la-la-la, keen to wait, come by the divorce rate, afraid to wife the girl. Sha-la-la-la-la-la, every year, her future's more unclear, you cause strife for the girl.
So I was thinking, we should probably wait for you to finish grad school. You know, just so you can work for a few years, we can save up some money. Look, I just want to make sure we're not jumping into anything too soon, you know?
Stop fucking around and propose!
Unless... Do you want to settle down right now? Alright, I guess we need to save our people.
Oh boy.
Nearing 30.
Not
her world. Both of you have high IQs.
Not her
world. Her we will lose to Tyrone and Shaniqua. Inside the final line, you think you need more time, but fucking wipe the girl. Sha la 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 la, this I vow, her life is ruined now if you don't wipe the girl. Sha la 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 la, breathe and soon the meaner baby boom will make you one to her. Sha la 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 la, buy a ring, a house with kings and fling, watch your new life unfurl. La 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 la, now's the time, let him land in Alice wine. You're gonna wipe the girl, wipe the girl, wipe the girl, wipe the girl, wipe the girl.
Hello, this is Robert Stark. I am joined here with The Truth to Live. Great having
Hello.
You back on.
Thanks.
So, how are you?
Pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing okay.
Yeah?
So we'll be starting off on talking about the theme of how to red pill your friends and family. So apparently you've been successful at that. It's
I've
not
been
that
really
hard.
Successful, but I also wasn't converting really people who were liberal or anything like that. So if you have family members that are super, like, liberal SJWs and you want to red pill them, I don't really know how to do that. I know how to convert people who are already sort of on that path anyway. I think that's the best route to go down.
Kind of
down.
Like people on the fence, like moderate conservatives.
Exactly. Actually, like, my sister, who is very red-pilled now, when I first started saying all this stuff, like, when I was still liberal but, like, kind of getting into this, I think I had her watch, like, a Camille Paglia video, and it was about Camille Paglia basically saying, oh, like, these girls, like, date rape, like, that's not actually rape, and, like, they need to take responsibility, blah, blah, blah. And my sister got really, really, really upset about that and started crying. And it kind of reminded me of that time when I started crying, when someone pointed out that men are better at math and science. It was, like, almost the exact same thing.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned that.
Yeah.
You mentioned that. That was one of your earlier videos.
Yeah, I've talked about that, like, a number of times, and it was really a lot like that. It was, like, this hysterical reaction that was, like, totally belligerent. But then I noticed, like, after that, she was, like, red-pilled. like, after a couple weeks after that, it was all, like, it was all over. Like, she was totally 100% not a liberal anymore. It was weird, because it was like she had to be, like, shocked out of her world view in a way. But after that, it was, like, it was just kept rolling. So, yeah, that was one thing. I guess, I think, like, my parents and the rest of my family are basically, like, racial realists. I mean, like, not really. I shouldn't say that. They're not. I think they're, like, they have a healthy racial awareness, but it's not something they, like, talk about all the time. But they're also, like, not, they're definitely not PC. They were never PC people. Like, no one in my family was ever PC. So, maybe I didn't even red pill them. Maybe I just, like, kind of, like, told them it's okay to...
Yeah, the thing is, maybe they're kind of... What's the word? Not, like, purple pill or magenta pill and making them a red pill. That's not... I mean, no offense, that's not the biggest accomplishment. The biggest accomplishment would be converting a, like, social justice warrior or a, like, conservative...
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a really big accomplishment. I think, like, my sister was liberal. She was not an SJW. I don't think I've ever... I'm trying to think if I've ever, like, come close to red-pilling an SJW. I don't really think so. I think it was already people who were kind of conservative to begin with and just had to, like, hear it. The other person was in my family who, like, really, really took to the red pill was my cousin, who she was another one of these people that was always conservative. But, like, once me and my sister, basically, we started telling her about, how, like, you know, feminism and, like, housewives, and she's like, I just want to be a housewife. Like, and this girl, she's probably, like, I don't know, 21? And she was, like, just right away, like, yep, like, I... 100% there. And it's,
she's lucky to, like, get that, to get the red pill at a young age. Like, you didn't find out till later.
Exactly. And I think she had already, she already was almost red pilled before. Like, I, we had really, or maybe she just, like, wanted to fit in with us in a way. So she just kind of liked that. But, like, it just wasn't, it wasn't difficult. And, like, what I was trying to say before is, like, a lot of people on the alt-right and everything are always saying, like, oh, like, all women, like, none of them, like, want to be traditional, and, like, all American women are just, like, gone, like, a lost cause, like, crazy feminazis and stuff. But, like, I don't really think that they are, because I know so many who aren't. And, you know, but maybe it also might have something to do with the fact that I'm a woman saying this stuff to them, because maybe if a man was saying the same thing, they wouldn't take to it as much. And also because I'm their friend, and they know me.
Yeah, it's effective. I mean, it is, women in general are more conformist, but I think other women can have a strong impact on other women. The thing with, like neo-reaction, the alternative right, all that stuff, red pill, it's a male-dominated movement, so...
It is.
It's not as... Well, it depends what your goal is. If your goal is to appeal to other men, but I do think people are more likely to take a person of their own gender seriously.
Yeah, I think so. I think so too. I also think it is really important to red pill women on this stuff because, like, if it's all men and you're, like, talking all this crap about patriarchy and you don't have any women, like, that agree with you, like, no one's going to take you seriously. I mean, that's just the way it is, you know? And there are women on the alt-right. There's just not as many. But they exist, and, like, I talk to them, and it's really cool. So I think a lot of the women are really smart. So
my take on kind of was, I have a sort of interesting take on the concept of a patriarchy.
Yeah.
The manosphere types claim that we're living under a matriarchy. And then the feminists say that we need to have a matriarchy. But there are some cultures that are
matriarchal.
Matriarchal. The older women you have, like, older women, and they keep younger women in line, and they're very strict towards them.
Yeah.
I don't think we really have a matriarchy, but I think we have a kind of more a society driven more by consumerism. And
I agree. I think
and
we
pop
have
culture encourages pop culture sort of encourages young women to be narcissistic and materialistic, but it's not because of a matriarchy. It's because it's what's sort of in the best interest of basically media companies want to make a profit, and it's a profit-driven society. That's the key.
I absolutely agree 100% with that. I don't think women. I think women just go along more with this stuff, but I agree with you. I don't think it's a matriarchal culture. I do think there's like women have advantages in some areas. Like I think as far as like employment, I feel like I have an advantage being a woman with what I do because there's not it's more of a male-driven field, but. The thing is that I don't even want to, like, work in the first place, so I don't really care about that. And the other thing is, what was I going to say? Matriarchal. I don't even remember. I forgot.
Have you had more success red-pilling your female relatives or male relatives?
Female. But I also don't have very many male relatives, so that's it. But I've just definitely had more success red-pilling women in general. I think it's because I'm a woman. I think a man would be more, I think, like, I don't want to sound like whatever, but there might be an aspect of guys don't necessarily want to listen to me because I'm a chick, you know? I'm not saying, like, I'm not like saying, oh, like, sexism is everywhere. But I kind of think that. You know, some guys aren't going to listen because I am a chick. So, that's fine, whatever. But that's why I think it's been easier for me.
Because generally, there's sort of a perception that women are more, are much more politically correct, but you're saying actually in your family.
Yeah. In my family, the men are more politically correct. I don't know why that is, but it just is that way. But no one in my family is really that politically correct, so it's not that big of a difference.
So you don't have any, so you basically don't have any liberals or conservatives. They're pretty much like moderately conservative.
Not really. You know, I have some maybe more moderate liberals, but no one is like a true liberal, I would say. Yeah, I'd say they're more like moderate conservatives, and then some of them are more on my end of the things.
Well, I don't know really how conservative I am because I took that political compass quiz and I came out like right smack in the center.
Really? That's interesting. I feel like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know that much about your beliefs, but you seem like more really like anti-capitalist and... I don't know. But you don't seem like you're socially conservative. I don't really know, though, because you haven't really told me, but it seems that way.
I'm just someone who interviews people. I have no opinions whatsoever.
Yeah, right. I just don't believe that. You interview a certain type of person, though, so that makes me think that you agree with I mean, you interview all types of people, but I'd say you lean towards a certain type of person. That makes me think that that is what your belief is. So.
The thing is, you were talking about these labels like liberal conservative. There's different types of liberals. There's social justice warriors, but there's people who are liberals for different, maybe because they support like a social safety net, there's a lot of different motivations.
That's true. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not necessarily dead set against social safety nets. I don't really know that much about it. You know? I don't know how, like, much most people know about it, though, also. it seems like one of those things that's really, like, I don't know, complex.
And you primarily focus more on issues, not so much on politics, but issues of both culture and morality?
Yeah, because I think that our whole culture has, like, is in, like, a really horrible, like, spiritual crisis. So that's what I focus on.
As for the red pill, like, how would you define the red pill? Are you mostly talking about, like, gender issues and morality issues? We're talking about other issues as well.
I think racial issues are definitely a huge part of the red pill.
Have you had success at red pilling your family on that? Would you rather avoid that topic?
I've had success with that, yeah, but that's as much as I'm going to say.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot. I've had probably more success with that than with some of the moral stuff. I mean, my mom is really sympathetic to conservative morals. She's my mom, you know. She's a mom. So.
I guess with some of the, like, with red-pilling liberals, I mean,
yeah.
Obviously talking a lot about, like, the racial stuff are going to scare people away. I think one way to start is, like, talking to liberals about, like, the effect that mass immigration has on the environment and workers.
Yeah.
It's, like, a good place to start.
I think that's good. I also think, like, if you talk about feminism, like, from how that, like, feminism is in the interest of, like, capitalists, I think people really take to that. Liberals do. Because it's kind of easy to see why capitalists would want to double the workforce with feminism. And
yeah, basically double the workforce and, like, quadruple the number of consumers. I mean, if you go into a, like, a shopping mall and you look at who's buying stuff in stores, like, 80% are women. That's a big boon to capitalism.
That's true. I also think that non-whites are more consumeristic, more materialistic.
Yeah, I mean,
Mm-hmm.
Look at sort of like when they had that whole Black Friday thing, and you look at all those people in line to get all this junk at, like, Best Buy, and the people, like, fighting like savages. I mean, some of them are white, but for the most part, like, you see a lot of you see blacks, Mexicans, some Asians.
It's a lot of it's like underclass people, like white trash, and then those people.
And I see that with, I mean, immigrants are more consumeristic. You see that with both the lower class and successful immigrants.
Yeah, even the successful ones, you're right. Keep going.
Also, one thing about like immigrants is I'm not putting all the blame on them, because America presents itself as a pretty much consumeristic society. So we sort of attract those types of people from other parts of the world.
I say America's like a shopping mall with a country attached to it.
It's
true.
If you look at Europe, I mean, people have a lot less stuff, but they have, like, they value sort of higher quality of stuff. I'm not 100% anti-materialistic. I like to have stuff if it has, like, a high aesthetic value. I'm just against, like, buying, like, large quantities of useless junk.
Yeah, me too. Definitely.
You also, you made a video about anti-natalism. That was your most recent videos, but you haven't been making as many videos lately.
Mm-mm. No, I don't know. I just don't really feel like it, making videos. Even though I have a good response. I know this might sound weird, but I don't really want to get too popular. I just don't. I don't know. I want to just keep it, like, how it is. Like, that's fine. Because I'm not necessarily that good at, like, handling. I feel like I'm not really, I shouldn't be like the face of anything. Like, I'd rather someone that's more competent than me do it.
You don't crave, do you crave a narcissistic supplier now?
I what?
Do you crave narcissistic supplier, not really?
No, I don't want to be a narcissist.
Anyway, with anti-natalism, I'm not an anti-natalist, but I do kind of get it from a philosophical standpoint, because I do have a misanthropic streak to me.
Yeah? What, you think life is so horrible that you shouldn't bring people into the world to experience that? Is that your point? Or is that the point you're thinking of?
I'm thinking of that, but the problem with anti-natalism is that the people who are most likely to get into antinatalism tend to be, like, the deepest thinkers and, like, intellectual types, and they basically remove themselves from the...
I don't think so.
So the people...
Because I think the deepest thinkers are natalists, because they realize that. Like me. I'm the deepest thinker. Sorry. What do I have to do?
Well, but if you go by the type of people who are having the most kids, like they're not our best quality people. If you really look at who's reproducing the most,
no, they're not. Okay. I don't know. The interesting thing, the argument I've heard from a lot of anti-natalists is that life is so horrible and miserable that you shouldn't bring new people into the world because. Like, it just creates no pain. But I think
that
people are...
So what were the key points that you made in that video about antinatalism?
I was trying to be really pragmatic. And what were the points? I think one of the points was that as you get older, your social network decreases and people start dying off. And no one's going to be able to look after you or check in on you if you don't have children. What else? I think people, like, need other people. So, you know, I think it's an integral part of being human. I also, this wasn't in the video, but this is something I thought of more recently, is that I think most people would say that, like, a loving relationship, like a romantic relationship, is pretty important for, what, 99.9% of people, I would say. Like, that's pretty important. Like, that's the central part of being alive. It's the subject of countless songs and novels and everything. It's everywhere. It's, like, the most important thing. But, like, the love that you feel for, like, another person is also apparently not as... I don't have kids, but people say the love you feel for a child, like, you don't know love until you feel that. So if a romantic relationship is that important, wouldn't having a child be even more important, more essential? Like, that's almost like living and never having a relationship. It's probably worse. So that's my new argument.
Do you think, are you making the case that everyone should have kids, or do you think there's some people who should not have kids?
If you don't want them, that's fine. I just think most people would be happier if they had a family. So, but, and yeah, I do think everyone should have a chance to be happy, but I can't force anyone to, you know? I feel sorry for them if they're going to... They might not think about it, like, in the same way I am, and then once they get older, they might, like, kill themselves if they have no one around. Maybe I'm being too alarmist, but I don't know. It's a new thing. It doesn't feel normal or healthy, that's for sure. Doesn't feel like that's how a healthy society functions. People just, like,
right.
Everyone's so... isolated and atomized, like, aside from that. Like, we really want to make it worse.
exactly. Like, originally, people lived and had sort of extended families, and then from there it was a nuclear family, and then now you have like a lot of you have like a lot of single moms, or you have a lot of people like living by themselves in apartments.
Yeah, like me. Do you live by yourself in an apartment?
Yeah.
It's normal, but it's not normal in any sort of like historical context. I mean, I don't really think it is. It doesn't really feel very good. I'm not like so lonely that I can't survive, but it's not that fun either. But I also don't want roommates.
That could be why there's like a rise in people with like psychological problems. There's
Definitely.
I mean, suicide didn't become widespread until the 20th century. Large numbers of people are on antidepressants.
Definitely. I think that's due to a number of things. But that's definitely one of the reasons, I think, because people are so atomized. It's really sad. I don't know who thought this was a good idea.
And it's not really talked about that much by mainstream media, academics, or even mainstream psychologists.
It's completely ignored. I think, like, I just don't think it's normal for people to be so alone. I think it's normal for people to, like, live in family situations. I'm not saying that solves every problem, and there are people that have families that aren't happy, but I think it contributes a lot to, psychological issues, like what you're saying. And, it's almost never discussed. It's like we're all supposed to be really, really, like, happy and, like, fulfilled by our careers or something. I don't know.
it's kind of like these people who shoot up their workplace and, like, all their coworkers said, oh, that person seemed, they came to work every day with a smile on their face.
Who was that?
That's just not a specific case, but you hear that a lot.
Oh, it's not? Okay.
People who go postal.
Yeah, doesn't surprise me at all.
Or if you act depressed, people think you're like really weird.
That is really true. I've learned that.
I think that's especially true in this country. Even when I lived in England briefly, I noticed like a lot of people, they didn't put on as much of a facade that they're always happy. Like in this country, especially, maybe it's different in different parts of the country, but especially in California, you're kind of expected to put on a facade that you're always happy.
Oh, it's definitely like that here too, where I live. I think I don't really like it that much, but I go along. I mean, I realize I kind of have to go along with it. If you don't, if you're like working at a job or something and you are just like kind of apathetic about it, it doesn't go over very well.
You've traveled a lot. Have you noticed the same thing in other countries?
I think it is more pronounced here, like what you said. I haven't really traveled that much.
Where have you been?
I've been to Europe. I've been to Mexico. That's it.
So what other points did you make about antinatalism? So that was basically your key point, is that...
My biggest point is that it's just not really normal or natural. Like, if you subscribe to, like, paleo ideals. Everyone's heard of the paleo diet, right? It's basically you go and you're trying to eat your, like, ancestral diet because that's what your body is most adapted to. So basically the way that they proved this, or the proof that I heard, was there were these gorillas in a zoo, and they were feeding them gorilla biscuits for years. And the gorillas were not happy. They were, like, depressed. They wouldn't mate. They wouldn't, They had all sorts of health problems. The gorillas were just not doing well in the zoo. So what the zookeepers did was they started trying to recreate the natural environment of the gorilla. Like, they started feeding them what they would have eaten in the wild. And they put in their cages, like, more, you know, closer to what it would have been in their natural environment. So the paleo diet and the paleo lifestyle is basically following that principle. So it's almost like if you want to recreate, like, how did humans evolve, like, in tribes, right? So
originally humans lived in the wilderness, and most people are urbanized today.
But they were, but the humans in the wilderness, and that too, that's important. But also they lived amongst other people. There was never a point where people lived alone in that situation. You were always, and you were usually around lots of people, like, all the time.
And that's
you
true.
Probably didn't.
That's still true in poor countries and places like Africa.
Right.
I know in Japan, like, Japan is a wealthy country, and they have this. Are you familiar with the whole hikikomori lifestyle in Japan?
The what lifestyle?
It's called hikikomori. Like, a lot of, it's mostly men in Japan. Like, they just stay indoors all day and they play video games, and they're just totally cut off.
No, I haven't heard of that.
But I think that's common in this country too.
Yeah, but it's like the further you get away, and it's like if you don't exercise too, you know, that's important. That's because, like, in your tribal environment, you would have been getting exercise and fresh air and all of these things. And so if you get really, really far from the ancestral human environment, you know, I think you're going to be less happy and of course, you're going to, like, reproduce in that ancestral human environment. You're going to be around your family. It's probably going to be a large extended family, too. And I see, you know, I see people that do live that way, like Orthodox Jews and traditionalist Catholics and, like, Muslims and whatever. And they probably are happier. Let's just face it, you know. So there's a reason why they do all that stuff. And that's kind of, like, the base of neo-reaction and whatnot. Too, is that all of these, like, really traditionalist lifestyles are, like, scientifically or correct or work, or, you know, they're that way for a reason. You know, that's kind of obvious to me, but it wasn't always apparent that way. So, yeah.
You've also done these videos. One of them is you singing to the song called Like a Degenerate by Chick Sagata.
Oh, yeah. That was kind of stupid, huh?
So she does.
Did you hear about
Chick Sagata?
Did you hear about what happened with that girl?
Like,
what?
Oh, Chick Sagata does, like, these parodies of pop songs.
Did you hear about that whole Flat Earth thing?
No. What happened?
You didn't?
No.
So, a lot of people think that that girl is actually a plant, because she apparently made a video where she was espousing that she believes in a flat earth. Like, actually. Like, apparently there are this group of people who believe that the spherical earth is, like, a conspiracy, and the earth's actually flat. And she believes them. And so a lot of people think that she was, like, a plant from somewhere. I have no idea.
I think she's a lunatic.
Right. She's probably a lunatic. So I should probably take those videos down. I just thought it was funny. I don't know what I was thinking, but it's kind of embarrassing. I should probably take it down.
I was trying to lighten the mood.
That's it.
The other one is Uncut the Right, who does the Disney parodies.
I like him. He's not a plant. He actually asked me to sing one of his things, and then I was going to, and then I, like, chickened out. I don't think I'm that good of a singer.
Yeah, that's always the story of your life. You're always chickening out.
Yeah, I chicken out a lot. Well, what else have I chickened out on?
Well, I've brought up certain topics, and you're like, you don't want to talk about them.
Oh. Well, give me some credit. I talk about a lot of things that most people won't, right?
That's true.
I'm just not that open. I'm open, but I'm not going to reveal, like, everything. I'm not going to break every single taboo. I'm just not that brave, unfortunately. You know? There's some things that...
I remember on one of your old shows, Luke tried to get you to say white power, and you were like, stop it.
Well, it's because, like, people are just going to give me shit for it. Like, why do I need to be saying that? Everyone's going to be like, oh, you're just pretending to be white. Like, people accuse me of pretending to be white. It's like, how am I pretending to be white? I just, like, say what I think. It has nothing to do with, like, being white or not. And I'm not pretending to be anything.
Who accused
you of that? I'm pretty... What?
Who accused
it's
you
like
of that?
Anonymous people messaging me, saying, why are you pretending to be white? It's like... I thought it was actually pretty funny. Do you think I'm pretending to be white?
Well, I thought you were white.
Oh, you did? Because I was pretending. I tried
you're
to,
not
I
white?
Tricked you. Pretty much, yeah.
You were also interested in discussing Catholicism?
Yeah. Well, I've been doing a lot of research about Catholicism lately. I've been learning a lot about it. And the thing to me that is most striking is that if you are to walk into a Catholic church today, into 2015, it's probably not going to be a Catholic church, because the Catholic church has been Protestantized. The vast majority of it has been Protestantized. And the most craziest thing is that the church itself is suppressing Catholic music. Like, all of the Catholic music written by Mozart and Beethoven and Bach and all of these amazing composers and Gregorian chant and all this stuff. 90% of Catholic churches today don't allow that music. And I don't believe in conspiracies really, but this just seems really, really insane and really awful. And it makes me think, like, also if the Catholic Church did have that music, like those are their prayers. Like, their prayers are all written like to classical music by Mozart and whatnot. And I'm just thinking,
Do you think this is coming out of the Vatican or the Catholic Church in America?
It is coming out of the... Well, it's hard to say. Because I don't know... Some people... I mean, there's all sorts of debates. But basically what happened was in the 1960s, the Vatican issued a reform. It was called Vatican II, the Second Vatican Council. Very big deal. A lot of people know about it. But the biggest, I think one of the biggest changes or the biggest things that really affected the church was that they basically required churches to use the vernacular for the masses, whereas before, all of the masses were in Latin everywhere. Anywhere in the world you walk into a Catholic church, the mass would be in Latin. And so, I mean, the other thing about that that's really important is all of the music that the church had come up with for the past 2,000 years was in Latin. And like I was saying, these are like masterpieces of Gregorian chant and classical music and Renaissance music and basically all Western music. Really, like, you know, probably the best music that has ever existed. So after they changed, they basically, for there was a number of years where I think they actually banned the Latin Tridentine Mass, which was the Mass that the church had had for, I'm not exactly sure how long, but a really long time. They basically forbid that from being allowed. So all the Catholic Masses from that point on, not all, there was a certain number of people that did retain the Latin Mass, but the vast majority of the Latin Masses were then changed to English, but all of the church music was in Latin, like I said. So they basically suppressed all of the music that the church had ever had and replaced it with, like, really low quality, like, folk music or, like, English, maybe some, like, Anglican stuff that was, like, okay. But that wasn't Catholic. And they, it's very disturbing to me that that could happen, that they could just overnight completely get rid of all of this beautiful, sacred music. So now what's happening is a lot of traditionalist Catholics basically either splintered off into their own groups or brought back some sort of Latin Mass. But like, the Latin Mass is the exception to the rule. So most Catholic churches you go into, it will be in English. It will be all Protestant music. And there's a number of other things that happened. I think that's the most important thing, because I think music, you know, I'm a musician, and I don't know. I'm very disturbed by all of it. The fact that the church itself is suppressing its own music seems like an act of the devil. I can't think of, and there's all sorts of conspiracies, like that it was Freemasons or whatever. And it is really hard for me to believe that this wasn't intentional, that it just happened on accident. Like, it's possible, but it's just really, really nuts. And the other thing that I've been learning about is, I've been watching videos of all of these new masses. It's called the Novus Ordo Mass, whereas before it was the Tridentine Mass. So the Novus Ordo Mass is basically a Protestant service where anything, pretty much anything goes. There's some vestiges of Catholic practices like communion and whatnot, but it's all very, like, non-formalized and Protestantized. So there's really no difference between a Catholic church and a Protestant church besides the name. And, yeah, some of them are in these. What's really, the other thing that I really don't like is these really, like, historic Catholic cathedrals that are masterpieces of architecture. People go in there expecting to hear Catholic liturgy and Catholic music. And they hear, and they go in there for a mass, and all of the music is Protestant. And then I'm sure millions of people have, that's happened, where they walk in and hear awful music and then conclude that Catholicism has absolutely nothing to offer. And there are millions of people who grew up Catholic, but their church wasn't Catholic. It was a Protestant church. So then they rejected it.
One thing that's interesting about Catholicism in America is that in Europe, the Catholic Church was dominant and created a lot of the high, kind of highbrow culture. But in America, the Protestants were dominant and Catholics were kind of associated with lower class immigrants like the Irish and Italians.
You're right. But even, like, that's true. But also where I live, I don't know if it's different. I think there's a really large Catholic community where I live for some reason. There's a few Catholic cathedrals that were built by immigrants, but that are, like, definitely on par with, like, European cathedrals. Definitely. But a lot, some of them were built, one of them was, like, built by Irish immigrants. The other one was built by a Catholic guy who was, like, a railroad tycoon who was, like, a bajillionaire at the time. And it's, like, in the center of the city, and it is, like, central. So he wasn't so poor. But I think there was, I think there was always, like, the anti-Catholic, like, undercurrent, you know, in America, for sure.
We touched on this in a previous show about aesthetics, but I noticed that different religions have different values on aesthetics and sort of idolatry. So in Christianity, Catholics mm-hmm. put a lot of value on creating beautiful cathedrals, but Protestants
right.
tended... I mean, there's different sects of Protestants, so like
right.
Episcopal Church or the Church of England is, they're a little bit closer to Catholicism, but a lot of Protestant churches, especially in America, are extremely bland. You see that,
right.
but would you say the same divides are in Judaism and Islam?
Well, Judaism, it's the opposite. It's like the Orthodox worship in a very plain area, and the Reform are more ornate. So as you get more liberal, it gets more ornate. But what's interesting is I think with a lot of those Protestant movements, they were trying to go back to something that was more Jewish, I think. And Judaism doesn't really have art. So, and Islam, like, kind of bans it, too, as far as I know. I mean, they have some impressive mosques, I guess, but they're not allowed to make anything that's representative of, like, anything.
You see that divide in Islam as well. So, like, Islam prohibited creating depictions of people, but in,
mm-hmm.
like, in Persian culture, they depicted that anyway because they had some degree of independence. So I guess different sects, like Wahhabism, is very strict about idolatry, and like they're basically influencing groups like ISIS who are destroying these ancient monuments. But I mean, a lot of people are not going. A lot of people don't want to admit this, but Islam was influenced by Judaism. That whole prohibition against idolatry.
I bet it was, and I really, really just do not sympathize with these people who call art idolatry and are iconoclasts and whatnot, because they basically hate art. I can't think of any other explanation that you would want things to be plain and simple, and that other than that you hate art. Maybe they saw it as expensive.
I know,
but I think the whole point of building these cathedrals, the Catholics, I think the main idea with this, and that it is so ornate, is because it is supposed to be the house of God. And if God should be, like, a king, like, you shouldn't serve God, like, and I think that's another thing I've noticed. Like, I think authentic Catholicism very much humbles the believer, whereas Protestantism and other religion, or Protestantism, basically, it's like God is your friend. Like, you're on the same level with God. Like, it's more communistic.
Yeah, it's really hard to feel spiritual in one of those
mega
churches that are basically like shopping malls. Yeah.
It's not spiritual. And another thing that traditionalist Catholics will say is that those people aren't celebrating God, they're celebrating man. They're celebrating themselves. And I tend to agree with that.
You have E. Michael Jones, and E. Michael Jones is a traditional Catholic, but he says that basically Protestantism is where he views it as similar to Judaism.
I agree.
You were mentioning him earlier.
Yeah, I think he has a lot of really interesting things to say. I have a really hard time discerning if everything that he says is true, though. Because I think a lot of it is, but some of it gets really, like, conspiracy theory-esque. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all. So it's hard for me to, like, differentiate what everything that he says, if it's true or not. What do you think?
I would look at his work on a case-by-case basis. Some of it, a lot of times he's spot on. Sometimes he goes kind of overboard with, as you said, conspiracy stuff.
Yeah, it's just hard for me to tell what's true and what's not coming out of his mouth. I think he's really interesting, for
sure. Some conspiracy stuff might be true. You just have to look at it objectively and not just go overboard with it.
Yeah, that's true.
One thing about Protestantism is in Catholic social teachings, like having a lot of wealth is seen as like a sinful. In Judaism and Protestantism, there's more of like a prosperity doctrine. And a lot of Protestant sects believe that they're being blessed by having wealth. Well, that totally, in Catholic social teachings, like greed is considered a really horrible sin.
Yeah, I agree. What about you? What did you grow up with in your religion?
I went to a Lutheran church, but it was extremely liberal. Like, it was sort of universalist. Like, they said, if you were a nice person, you could go to heaven. But
that's
that's
kind of what the Catholics are saying now, too, though. That's the thing. Most Catholic churches will say that's very similar things.
An interesting thing happened at that church because there was a Jewish group that rented the church. Basically, they used it for their services on Saturday. And they actually covered up the cross. They covered up the cross of the church because they found the cross offensive. And some people in the church were very angry at the pastor about that.
I would be. That's like, I don't know. I don't believe in, do you know what ecumenism is?
Yeah.
That's something that the Catholic Church has been very into, synthetic into as well, and I'm really against it. Because here's like something I thought of, like sometimes these Catholic churches will invite like Jewish rabbis to speak in their church or whatever. But the Jews would never do that. They would never have like a Christian minister speaking to their congregation. No way. That's the thing. So it's like with these Christians, it's like you're just getting yourself like you're letting people take advantage of you. You know? And also like you can say, oh, like, if you're a Christian, you should just be generous and, like, not whatever. But actually it says in the Bible that you should not throw your pearls to swine. You should not give the children's food to the dogs. And the dogs are people. So you're not just supposed to be, like, generous and nice to everyone. Like, that's a interpretation of what it actually says. You're not supposed to be indiscriminately generous to people.
What is the Catholic Church is very universalistic, but I mean, if you look at, compare Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, with Judaism, it's very much tied to the Jewish people as a group. With Islam, Islam is multiracial. Like you have white Bosnians, you have black Africans, you have Asian Indonesians, but at the same time, you sort of have like the Arab as the core dominant group. But Christianity has become totally universalistic. Originally, Christianity had its origins in the Middle East, but throughout history, it became very synonymous with Europeans. The Crusaders were Christians, the people who conquered America, the European colonists were Christians. But today with the Catholic Church, I mean, Catholicism is dying in Europe, and the future of the Catholic Church is in places like Mexico, Central America, and Africa,
I really believe the only reason it's dying in Europe and whatnot is because they're suppressing Catholicism. The Church is suppressing Catholicism. I think that if their liturgical practices were the same, if they had Latin masses, if they had Mozart masses, in these churches, I think people would come. I think that's the only reason why it's dying. And, you know, maybe they wouldn't be as, like, full as they were at one point, but I think they would be doing better. I really think that that's a huge reason why the church is in a total 100% crisis, is because it's not really Catholic. It's Protestant, and Protestantism always fails, in my opinion. Just devolves into, like, nothing. And part of, like, what is so interesting and cool about Catholicism was their emphasis on, like, education and learning and having, like, these really high standard, like, high aesthetic standards. And then they just threw it all away. It's absurd to me. And also, like, I think the reason why is because, one of the reasons why is because they did want to become this world church and bring Catholicism to Africa and whatnot. I don't necessarily have a problem with that. I actually heard this Latin Mass rendition by, like, an African tribe, and it's called Misaluba, and it was this basically Belgian friar went to the Congo and converted these people to Catholicism, and he actually, like, taught them how to sing, like, choir, like, choral style, and it was honestly, like, one of the coolest things I've ever heard. Like, basically, he was teaching them how to, like, improve their art, and they kind of, like, incorporated their tribal music, and he just, like, made it awesome by teaching them how to sing, like, professionally. And to me, like, that is, like, what Catholicism is. It's, like, bringing people, like, culture and, like, teaching them how to, like, live better. Because I do think that is, like, it has, like, the best moral system. And it has, like, the best, like, aesthetic system. So I don't, you know, I'm not against, like, missionaries and whatnot. I don't think that's necessarily so bad. I think people should have a chance to, like, live according to those principles, because I think they're good. So, but then it was just kind of, like, I think it was kind of insulting that the church was, like, expected that people either A, couldn't appreciate high culture, or B, weren't capable of appropriating it or teaching it and whatnot, when I actually think that anyone, like, we teach children how to sing that style, so why can't we teach, like, other, I don't know, it was just, it's very strange and bewildering to me, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, Christianity, I think that's been the case of missionaries. I mean, different societies have sort of developed their own strands of Christianity throughout history. I mean,
yeah.
There's a big difference between European Christianity, American Christianity, and Middle Eastern Christianity.
Yeah. I don't know, but, like, hearing that African mass that was, like, an actual Catholic mass by Africans, like, honestly, like, that made me, like, want to become a missionary. No, that sounds really crazy, but it was one of the coolest things I've ever heard in my life. So, and it was like, yeah, it was like European, like using like musical, like European musical ideas, but those are like genius ideas that people don't always think of on their own. Like, you can't just expect people to, like, you know, come up with these like really amazing choral things. Anyway, I think I'm getting off topic.
One thing about people who go to church is I think a lot of people go there more to feel good than to actually get it.
They go to feel good. One of the big reasons Christianity has this really bad reputation these days is because, yeah, people think it's, like, for proles. Christianity is, like, for white proles, basically, in America at least. And I think a huge part of the reason why is because the Catholic Church eliminated all of the high culture from the church. So they basically select for people with bad taste. Because anyone with good taste is not going to want to go to these new Catholic masses or these like evangelical masses because they're in really bad taste. So they're like, they like t- took out all of the people with good taste. They chased them away, basically.
Well, if you mentioned how Christianity is seen as kind of parole. If you look at, like, European history, like, all the greatest artists from the Renaissance,
right.
even some of the more modern artists even were Christians or Catholics. But
exactly,
most,
and I'm
basically,
saying,
I'd say the majority of artists, the majority of artists, musicians, and creative types or writers today, I'd say the majority of them are secular.
They are, and I really think it's because of the Catholic Church changed. I think if the Catholic Church was the same as it had been in 1950, I think a lot of artists would absolutely be Catholic. I'm, like, 100% certain. Because I'm an artist. I'm, like, with those people, you know, like, 100%. And, like, I've seen these, like, real Latin masses that are real Catholicism. And there's no way, like, artist people would be, like, turned off by them. There's no way. But, yeah, I mean, people like that.
Yeah.
But then they, I think, yeah, I mean, I think people realize, I think maybe those people realize maybe Christianity was something else at one time. But then they just think it, like, devolved, and that's, like, just the way it is. But the Catholic Church, like, it's just not the Catholic Church anymore. That's the only reason why people are so, like, against it. I think that's why. Because they haven't really seen what it really is. But, you know, I think the whole point of the church trying to reform themselves was they were trying to, like, appeal to more proles or whatever. But, like, the thing is that, like, good art appeals to everyone. Bad art only appeals to people with bad taste. But good art appeals to people with good taste and bad taste. Because, like, everyone goes to the Vatican and likes it, even people with bad taste. So I think they were completely just wrong about, or I don't know, like, maybe it was the devil that just, like, it seems like an active destruction of the church. So, I don't know. Very weird. I don't know what it was.
So we are out of time, so I would like to thank The Truth Will Live for being on.
Sure, no problem.
That's all we have for today's show, so take care, and we'll be back with you next time.
Great, thanks. Bye.